Good afternoon. This morning, we looked at the precepts regarding what is to be stopped. So these are 3 points of advice in relation to each of the three jewels, which we are to train ourselves in order to protect and enhance our refuge. So the Buddha, recognizing that the Buddha is a being who has attained complete liberation from the sufferings of samsara through abandoning the afflictions together with their seeds and stains, and therefore that a Buddha has the capacity to guide us to attain that same state. No other teacher or tradition can do so. Therefore, it's inappropriate to put our trust in another teacher or tradition, trusting that they can lead us to a state of liberation. That would be misplaced. So this is the first training in terms of what should be stopped in relation to the Buddha jewel, towards the Dharma. Here, recognizing that the very purpose of the Dharma is to benefit beings, we should therefore abandon or stop, so the training is to abandon or stop any harmful thought and certainly physical verbal deed that brings any form of harm to others. This should be refrained from. So that's a second training. The third is in relation to the Sangha jewel. And here we should be wary of coming under the influence of those who denigrate the three jewels and seek to influence us in a negative way, pushing us away from the three, or leading us away from the three jewels. We should be wary of coming under their influence. So this is the third precept or training.
And
Having looked at the three trainings which are to be stopped, then started with the trainings regarding what is to be accomplished. So there we've started to look at the first, which is in relation to the Buddha jewel. This will be followed by the training in relation to the Dharma jewel and one in relation to the Sangha jewel. So in relation to the Buddha jewel, here what is to be accomplished is to develop an attitude of reverence towards any Buddha image that we encounter, no matter the material or even the craftsmanship, nor the size, should we have any kind of discrimination towards it, but rather see it as precious and as a basis upon which to give rise to various minds of virtue and inspiration, relating to whatever Buddha image we encounter as like a physical representative of the Buddha. And certainly, whether it's the sculptor who created the statue or the painter who created the tanka, there will be a variety in terms of their skill and talent. And that's fair enough. And one can recognize that some artists are more skilled than others. But one's criticism should not be directed at the image, but rather the training here is to train our mind to have a response of reverence, of awe, in relation to any image of Buddhas, and not see them merely as works of art. When one is shopping for a Buddha image, then it's important to watch one's mind in regard to this training of refuge. Because our normal way of shopping very much differentiates on the basis of the object. I like this one, I don't like this one. So here we need to be mindful of our approach and rather consider from the perspective of the skill of the sculptor or the skill of the painter. And on that basis, we can justifiably comment that a particular artist appears to be expressing greater talent than another. But we should not denigrate the image that has been painted, but rather we should relate to that image with awe and reverence, recognizing what it represents and its the great potential for generating virtue. So therefore, when we look at for example, tankas, don't be on guard to praise this Buddha image as being excellent, but this one, well, maybe not so much. Rather, look at it through the perspective of the artist as varying degrees of talent, but the creation, the various Buddhas that are being depicted, these are flawless, in particular because of what they lead to, the generation of merit.
Jidara
Returning to the text, the very bottom of page 128 in the e-book in the handouts, and in the published book in the middle page 109, Lama Tsongkhapa quotes on Nagarjuna's letter to a friend. Just as the wise honor any depiction of the Sugata, however fashioned, even those made from wood. Yeah, this has been quoted to as a source for what Lama Tsongkhapa has stated, which is there certainly is a varying ways that statues or tankas differ. So in terms of statues, they will differ in terms of the material used. Some will be gold-plated, some will be made from silver, others from copper, some from wood, some from clay. So a variety of materials will be used. There will be a variety in terms of the size and certainly in terms of the skill of the sculptor. So there's many ways that various images of Buddhas differ. But one should be wary to criticize the image of the Buddha, but rather one's way of relating to the image, no matter what it's made from, its size, or even the skill of craftsmanship, the way of relating should be one of reverence, of awe, of recognizing who the Buddha is, what he's accomplished, what he means in our life, and thereby generating minds of virtue. So therefore, this is guidance on how we should relate to all images of the Buddha. Now Lama Tsongkhapa presents some of the results, the subtle results that follow from being disrespectful to images of Buddhas. Exegesis of the Vinaya states that Manavakapila abused members of the Sangha who were learners and non-learners in 18 different ways, saying things like, "You elephant heads, how do you know what is Dharma and what is not?" Ah, Then the sutra states that this person, Manavakapila, abused members of the Sangha who were learners. Learners means those who are on the paths of accumulation and preparation, and non-learners, referring to those who have realized emptiness directly, so those on the paths of seeing and meditation, in 18 different ways, saying things like, you elephant heads, how do you know what is Dharma and what is not? The result of speech comes as, because of that, he was born as a sea monster, a marine creature with 18 heads, and remained an animal from the time of the teacher Kasyapa to that of the Shakya king. So this was the karmic result following from his deprecating these great beings, those who have all attained a path. And so this time period in which he was living as this marine creature with 18 heads is an immense period of time, in that the teacher Kasyapa is a former wheel-turning Buddha in our world. So again, this word teacher here is the uppercase T for the founder Buddha, the teacher Kasyapa, all the way up to that of the Shakya king.
And in
Lam Tsongkhapa then quotes from, refers to chapters and finer points of the Vinaya, which recounts that after the teacher Krakuruchanda had passed into Nirvana, King Karamut had a big stupa built. A hired workman scoffed at it a couple of times, saying, "Who knows when we will ever get such a huge stupa finished?"
And Dumbo Kowachi said in Yangan Debi Chelia and Jebu Zedin, Sajigi, the Chudin Chingis or the Chudin Chimbushi Uchi Shan, Shanagi, Shan do that, the Nigi that Leralek and Lamisin, Leralek, Dushin, Sajel Shandu, the Leralandi Lamishi Kasorsna, Leralandi Gitatus, Magubal Shia, the Chudin Chimbushi, Shan Kaja Saji, that Jenny Kaja or the Nigitian Saju, the Taz Yomer Saji, Kodinis or Dushin, Dus Magubitone.
This also refers to a distant founder teacher. So again, this is a founder teacher of the Dharma, teacher Krakuruchanda, who lived in an incalculable period of time ago. After he had passed into Nirvana, then a king built this large stupa built. So he commissioned the stupa. And a workman, he wasn't very impressed with this idea, thinking it was a bit much, and was criticizing the commissioning of such a large stupa.
She Chi level simba, chi level simba na jude, langan yis yi jibu jidu jude, chuden la tabe, dong anshin lu chung la, gie nyen bige, nyen ba sanden du gie war sung be es.
Here, this workman was criticizing it or scoffing, and he did so several times. And this is certainly something that we can relate to in that it's easy to do, that we see an endeavor, even a very virtuous endeavor, and for our own reasons, we criticize it. So then the Lama Tsongkhapa continues to recount what the result, the comic result that followed. Later on, once the stupa had been completed beautifully, he felt so sorry that he used his wages to have a golden bell made and attached to the stupa. On account of that, he was born as well-sounding one, with an ugly complexion and small body, but a very pleasant voice. So as we see here later, when the stupa the king had commissioned was completed, it clearly would have lived up to the expectations of the king. And this would have been a surprise to the worker, and regret arose within him, recognizing that what he thought was just a waste of time and effort actually is something quite remarkable and of great benefit. Hence then, regret arose within him. And because of this regret, he was compelled to offer from his wages a golden bell, which had a beautiful sound. So through the comic results then that followed, through making this virtuous offering, he had a beautiful voice, and therefore he became known as well-sounding one in his future rebirth. But because of the negative karma that had not been purified, the karma from criticizing both the very commissioning of the stupa as well as its large size, Then he was born with an ugly complexion and small body. Continues. Therefore, do not joke about holy images, saying, it is like such and such. Also, it is inappropriate to critique a holy image in terms of its size or whether it is made from good materials and to discourage someone from completing it through your disruptive remarks. So this is something that's all too easy for us to do. We have this habit of generally appraising what is in accordance with our preferences and criticizing what is contrary to our preferences. So this is something to be aware of and to guard against, in particular against virtuous objects such as these. Now, when Amit Tsongkhapa then writes here, also it is inappropriate to critique a holy image. So this is clear, the criticism is directed at the Buddha image in terms of its size or whether it is made from good materials. So here the mistake that we need to guard against is criticizing the image. It's fine to recognize this one's larger, this one's smaller. It's fine to recognize that this one is made from gold, this one's made from wood. It's also fine to say, I have a preference for this size and that material. But one should not then engage in critiquing or criticizing the image, saying, oh, this image is no good, or the Buddha doesn't look quite right, made from this material or in that size. So, again, one can have one's own preferences in terms of material and size and so forth, and acknowledge that, express that, but one should be wary of criticizing the image of the Buddha. That is the mistake to guard against.
Then Kukurangu Chebapuine,
This precept, what we are being guarded against is, what we've been guided to guard against is to criticize the Buddha image. Having one's own preferences, that is fine, but to guard oneself against criticizing the image of the Buddha. Because we need to be careful that if we're praising one, we may well be criticizing another. By praising that it's made from a precious material, we need to be very careful we're not criticizing one that's made from a more simple material. Likewise with size. It's fine to have one's own preference, but we need to be sure not to be critiquing the Buddha image. Again, this is made much easier if one understands the purpose of holy images. And that is by seeing them to be reminded of the Buddhas, to be reminded that through their omniscient consciousness they are present with us, and that this is a physical reminder that is so useful for us ordinary beings who cannot perceive the Buddhas, that this physical reminder is like having the Buddha present. And its very purpose is to help us accumulate merit and progress towards the attainment of our own enlightenment. And how merit is accumulated in dependence on a Buddha image comes about in dependence on our virtuous attitude, not the size or material of the Buddha image. If the Buddha image touches us, it will lead to arisal of mind such as faith and an intention to develop the qualities of the Buddha such as wisdom and compassion. And that will happen if we are inspired by the Buddha image. And for that, it can be of a material or of a size that appeals to us. And therefore, the material and the size is not of much importance. It's how we relate to it. That is of primary importance. So again, we are being guided here in this precept to guard against criticizing the Buddha image, but rather to understand its very purpose.
Kulikeba Kura Shangi, then a new bottle of Chimbo Yevena, that he did my dad to get go to get Dashavina, that is in him to us, I worry. The Dandine is Ianchi, Dini di Manoachi Hokishimor, Chidan Gudla, Yava Chabra, Gibja Karine, Chabra Meba, Chibi Yuda, Chase Yu, Chibuchigan to share with it, so 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 soon I'm side Chiba, Gunung Tony Chibana, so soon I'm side Chiba and Chabakayo, Malaysia. Yan so so good Shamba in a Kura, Chedina, Karishavi name. 但 소수기 대비기 토네 다 소수기 뇌당 체제 다 유피에 야가 되게 강 야야기도 샤베나 수능 체세버래 난지 아 꿀에 개발 요 말씀 소수 니바르 쉐네 된지 교교 되게 다나 난지 통성도 차르고 니 제사 지교 말에 소수기 니 마담에나 가야만 니베 다와 있나 강 야야기 소고래 디 아니 용고래세 제사 지니 대한지 에 하고 계시 무책도
Hopefully what's coming across is that the training here is really about training our mind in small, in subtler ways or in relation to smaller things than one generally thinks about. In this way, we produce ever more skill in terms of determining our mind and taking control of our mind. So furthermore, in relation to, let's say, you're going to commission a statue to be made for you, or you'll go and purchase one. Then, having heard that you can accumulate, that the merit that you accumulate depends on your attitude towards the holy object, and it's therefore independent of the quality of the material, the expense of the material, or the size. In other words, you can accumulate huge merit in relation to a small image made from a simple substance. Then when one goes to purchase or have some, or to commission an image, one needs to be quite aware of one's motivation. If one is more inspired by something in a simple material, and of a regular size, then perhaps that's what you should commission. But if there is an influence of, oh, well, the material and the size doesn't matter so much, I'll rather save my money, spend less here, and then I have more for other things, then that's not an attitude that's going to lead to much merit being accumulated. In fact, it's more of an attitude of miserliness. So from this we can see there's an individual preference will lead to the varying degrees of accumulation of merit. So one needs to look honestly at oneself, make an honest determination that in accordance with my means, this is what I can readily afford, and this is also, and taking into account, what genuinely will inspire me to cultivate the minds of the Dharma within, inspire me to want to make offerings on my shrine and so forth. So there one needs to look at one's own individual disposition and act accordingly. It's not hard and fast rules or approaches, but one needs to be aware of oneself, one's preferences, and act in accordance.
Romba Kargi Chimbe, Sergi Shushi, Jinne, Lembala, Shibe, Jurishan, Chizin Yukula, Mileba, Me, Hasone, Jing Sone, Jurasha, Susim Bakula, Detter, Deke Zedo, Kasa, Detter, Zekeza.
Lama Tsongkhapa now continues with someone called the Great Yogi. Nel Dzogpa Chenpo, Janchup Rinchen, showed Atisha a statue of Manjushri and asked, "What is the quality like? If it is good, I'll take it and offer the 4 gold coins Rongpa Garge has given me." Atisha replied, "There's nothing that is more excellent about the Venerable One's body. As for the sculptor, he's average." Having said this, he placed the statue on the crown of his head. It is said that he used to do this with every piece of work.
Oh, and Georgia, Dumbares, Georgia, and the goody, and Georgia, Chambershine, the Yalu, Yalu, Canesto, Canesto, Yapu Yunane, Ting He, and the chair, that from Bokara said, Michi Munidoa, Digi Coronia, Serki, she said, that's the Komashiroji, the Negashi Corona Puyo Sarawa, just a deep Puyo de two parje, and he said, good to Lingi Yinsenia.
This person in John's adventure was a meditator, a yogin, and clearly had some renown. Then he engaged in this dialogue with a teacher, and the teacher showed the example of what has been presented here in the way in which to relate to a statue, which is to regard Buddha images as all being holy, in the sense of something that one can bring great benefits for oneself and others. But there is, of course, difference in terms of the quality, the talents of the artist. But whatever the finished result is, that is worthy of genuine respect.
A George in Lingar Summer Lana, George Shani, Chizin Gula Mila Pames, Chesa, Chizin Jemme and Gula, Yahoo Minusia Kayamas, Chesa, Chizin Jemme and Gula, Yahoo Jan Yamada, Chizin Jemme and Gula Mila by Yahoo Mela Kayamas, Jayamas, all Mila Kayamas. In a daddy D, good deal, Hazoti, Suhendi, and a Dingling Jasha, Suhendi, and a Reshas and Dingling Jashas, and those Sunshin. Good part, Deva Chesia, and Jesuin Korongi, a chicken, Jesuin Gudi, and a Jamayan Gudi, and Georgie, a jewel or two, Shinishana, a legend.
Further, we can see from Matisha's reply, he didn't make a big thing, he just responded in a simple way. He wasn't necessarily correcting the questioner, Kadijan's retention, nor was he going out of his way to criticize the sculptor, just said very simply, the sculptor is average, and then showed reverence to the Buddha image. From the final sentence, it is said that he used to do this with every piece of work. This is then how Atisha acted in general. And if he acted like this in general, it would have been to set an example for those around him. And now that it's been recorded for later generations too. So this is how we also should relate to images of Buddhas. We should relate to them in the appropriate manner, recognizing their value, relating to them as objects of faith, objects to generate our faith, and thereby inspire us to become Buddhas as well. This is their very purpose. If our response to images of the Buddha are to look for faults with the artistry, then this is really missing the point. When we see our objects of the Buddha, the point is to generate our determination to become a Buddha, not to critique the image at all.
And the chicken, what Jane and Guba Kujapjana, Tela Chopuyata, ん、どうしてんの、チェゴレ、まど、んでりゃ、あ、こう、や、こう、めんどせやな、ディグリ、ニジゴメンドリニジゴ、どうせ、でねけ、チェゴマリ、でんさ、だ、かんじる、こう、かんで、チン、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギュ、ギ
So this advice, this precept, this advice that is to be accomplished is that we need to train in this way of thinking. I want to become a Buddha, attain the state completely freed of suffering, and a state where I can be of immeasurable benefit to others. To do so, I'm so fortunate to have met Buddha Shakyamuni's teachings. He is the very teacher of refuge, the illuminator of the path to enlightenment. And then whenever one sees a physical representation of the Buddha, if one is trained well, a sense of joy will arise in one's mind at being reminded of the presence of the Buddha, being reminded that with the Buddha's omniscient consciousness and great compassion, the Buddhas are surrounding us. And in this way, we give rise to a generation of faith when seeing a Buddha image. And from this generation of faith, we give rise to a determination to become Buddhas ourselves, to have the kind of impact that this remarkable being has had on countless beings over the millennia. So this is a way, this is how we should be relating to Buddha images. And in that entire description, you saw there was no space given to acting like an art critic, relating to a mere object of art, criticizing even the skill of the artist, let alone the material, or the shape, or the proportions. All of that is irrelevant. We have a greater goal in mind. And therefore, our way of relating to holy images should not be how we go through society saying, I like this, I don't like that. But the very purpose of holy images should be apparent to us. And this is how we should relate to them. So this is the way of thinking in this precept or this advice that is to be accomplished, that we are to train in. So that then completes the advice that we are to accomplish in relation to the Buddha jewel. Now the advice that is to be accomplished in relation to the Dharma jewel. Avoid showing disrespect to even as little as a four-line stanza of the Dharma. Avoid pawning volumes of scripture, trading them, putting them on the bare ground or in dishonorable places, carrying them around together with your shoes, stepping over them, and so forth. Instead, treat them respectfully as if they were the Dharma jewel. Look in the first sentence, avoid showing disrespect to even as little as a four-line stanza of the Dharma. So in fact, we could take this to mean even a single letter of the Dharma. And the way that one, showing disrespect would be through a physical verbal expression of a mind of disrespect. So this would be, for example, if one sees a piece of paper with a Dharma verse on it, and being dismissive of it, oh, it doesn't matter if it's lying around, it's just a verse, it's just a single verse of Dharma. So this is a dismissive mental attitude being expressed through physically ignoring something, not picking it up and so forth. So here, this attitude is the problem, this dismissive attitude not regarding even a small portion of Dharma, even a tiny portion of Dharma, as something of great value. Namasam Kapa continues, avoid pawning volumes of scripture or trading them. So this is physical expression, so pawning or selling, which comes from a mind of disrespect or a mind that doesn't value the Dharma. So one is treating these texts as possessions and utilizing them in a way to gain financial benefit. This is not the right attitude to have towards Dharma texts. And Lama Tsongkhapa continues, putting them on the bare ground or in dishonorable places, carrying them around with your shoes, stepping over them and so forth. So then these are various illustrations of physical expressions of a mental attitude of disrespect or disregard towards the Dharma texts. So in the first couple of illustrations, this disrespect or disregard was in relation to oneself receiving some financial benefits. These other illustrations are about not being bothered, to separate the Dharma from the other parts of one's luggage. Perhaps that's just too much bother. And one therefore has an attitude of disregard, certainly an attitude that lacks respect for the teachings, even if it's just a four-line verse, that can lead to liberation. Lama Tsongkhapa concludes with, instead, treat them respectfully as if they were the Dharma jewels, or treat the text, even just a single verse or a single word, as if it were the Dharma jewel itself.
Kishi jenga wa sunrab dhen dhangpa thongwa na thalmo jarende dhangs, chi dhang manyu ba na thalmo jorke es.
Now Lama Tsongkhapa gives some illustrations from his time when the Kadampa tradition was dominant or prevalent, the Kadampa Geshe Chenghwa. It is said that Geshe Chenghwa used to put his palms together and stand up when he saw scriptures being brought to him. Later on, when he could not stand up anymore, he used to simply put his palms together. What this example from Geshe Tsenghwa shows is that this physical act is not what's important, the standing up, joining your palms together. Rather, being who he was, we can have confidence that this came from a genuine expression of veneration for the words of the Buddha. This is of what is important, that expressing that through one's physical activity. This is excellent, but not merely doing it out of habit or custom. So genuinely expressing reverence for the words of the Buddha and the commentaries to them by recognizing their great value, that it's a independence on words such as these now before me, beings will gain freedom from suffering. And with this arising in his mind, he would stand up, and put his palms together in the expression of prostration. Lama Tsongkhapa then continues. It is said that when Atisha came to Ngari, there was a tantric practitioner who did not listen to the Dharma from him. However, when a scribe smeared plaque from his teeth on a Dharma text, Atisha saw it and, unable to bear it, exclaimed, "Oh no, don't do that, don't do that." From this, the tantrika gained faith and listened to the Dharma.
Then
Nadi is a region of Tibet, and when Atisha went there, there was a particular tantric practitioner who hadn't heard, who didn't know of Atisha, and had therefore didn't know that he was a great being, so therefore hadn't yet received teachings from him. But when Atisha approached, and there was a scribe, and the scribe, one imagines perhaps in the absence of glue or a marker, was using the plaque from his teeth to mark the text. Atisha was repulsed by this and expressed his view that the Dharma is something of great importance. It needs to be treated with reverence as well as accomplished within. Through this display of sincere and authentic faith in the Dharma, the tantric practitioner gained faith in the Atisha and then received teachings from him.
Ranja chela zemo jiang jeber dude, cheda che mawala maguba, shirep che yun yun, mongba dadin di is a cho dile mongna, and chitu sungsos.
A further illustration of Kadampa Geshi Sharawa said, "We play around with the Dharma in all sorts of ways. Disrespect for the Dharma and for Dharma teachers is a cause for distorted wisdom. We are already confused enough now. What are we going to do if we become more confused?"
So as Geshe
Sarawa said, that if one has a disrespectful attitude towards the Dharma and teachers, this cause for distorted wisdom, meaning that if one has a disrespectful attitude, one's mind is closed. Therefore, the teachings, one either will not engage in the teachings, or one will not be open to teachings one receives. And in this way, one's wisdom, or one's intelligence, it's the same word, one's intelligence is not going to grow, because one is keeping the Dharma apart from oneself. And perhaps through one's distorted understandings, one will develop misunderstandings. In this way, one's wisdom or intelligence may even decline.
Shorawa
says, "We are already confused enough." So this word confused is an ignorance. It's the ignorance of confusion which comes through a lack of knowledge, which a confusion that is this the right course of action? Is that the right course of action? This confusion, which comes about through either a lack of learning or lack of integration of what's learning. So we already have enough of this. There's enough uncertainty in terms of the correct course of action. So what are we going to do if we become ever more confused? If our knowledge is not growing, but actually it's either we're staying in the state of confusion or we're adding to it through distorted understandings.
And
What Amitsukapa has presented here is an explanation of this this advice in terms of what should be accomplished in order to develop our refuge in the Dharma Jewel. So we have refuge in the Dharma Jewel, the true paths and true cessations. We recognize that that is the actual refuge. That is what will provide us with protection from suffering. So therefore, we need to accomplish this attitude of respect towards the physical representation of the Dharma, independence upon which we will come to gain knowledge, and independence on that knowledge, we will integrate it within ourselves, developing our wisdom, eventually developing true paths and true cessations, the Dharma Jewel within. So this precept, this advice, is what we need to accomplish in order to have the correct attitude towards the Dharma Jewel and thereby enhance our refuge in the Dharma. Through having reflected well on refuge, as has been guided before, one will have recognized that the Buddha is a reliable source, and therefore his teachings, these are what we need to accomplish within ourselves. So whenever one sees even a four-line verse of a sutra or a commentary to the sutras, then a mind of reverence for that will arise, and this will be shown through respectful behavior, because we'll have a clear understanding that the way that I'll gain actual protection from suffering is to develop the Dharma within and develop it to the point where I cultivate the Dharma Jewel, true paths and true cessations, in my own continuum. And the only way this will come about is through studying teachings such as these and reflecting on them. Through this process of meditating based on knowledge, that I will generate the Dharma Jewel within my own mind. So this understanding will lead to a spontaneous response of valuing, of recognizing as precious the representations of the teachings of the Buddha, in other words, the various texts. And in this way, we will spontaneously, naturally relate to them with reverence.
And the Sanjele just draw in the Sanjele Yiche, Koyu Dunga Tata, Yubi, Nuba Sanje Yori, Sebe Sanjele Yiche, just draw Yiche, Dingi, Ludingi, Yicheva in the Sanji Yuku, Yuganesina, the Sanji Yuganesina, Chiyono, Delia, and the Devadang, and the Chiyo Puyatang, and the
And to summarize together, these two precepts in relation to what should be accomplished towards the Buddha jewel and the Dharma jewel, to see how this way of thinking builds one on the other, serving the purpose of strengthening our refuge, is that whenever, through having reflected well on the qualities of the Buddha, the qualities of his body, his speech, his mind, and the expression of both compassion and exalted wisdom, as well as his enlightened activities, as well as then the qualities of the resulting Dharma and Sangha jewels. Then, when one merely sees a Buddha image, what will arise immediately in one's mind is a reverence, faith towards the Buddha. The material from which the image is made, the size of the image, and the skills of the sculptor won't be seen as of any importance, but rather what will arise in our mind is a mind of faith at being in the presence of a physical representation of the Buddha. And from this mind of faith, other virtuous minds will arise, such as the determination to cultivate the qualities of the Buddha, a deep appreciation for the beneficial impact the Buddha has had in this life and so many lives previous, as well as the beneficial impact he's had on so many beings. And this too will lead to a strong burning desire. Let me have such an impact on others too, by cultivating the same qualities he cultivated, by striving just like he did, following his example, having him as my role model. So this is the way to relate to Buddha images, and this is what is to be accomplished. So too, when seeing physical representations of the teachings of the Buddha, or the great commentaries to them, or the commentaries by great masters to them. So when seeing whether it's just a word or a verse or texts, to recognize, here I am in the very presence of the teachings that by reading and reflecting upon, I will spiritually develop, and that I will be one amongst so many who have read this text and have taken and been transformed by it. So with this understanding of the importance of the Dharma, that it's only independent on studying and meditating on what one has studied, that one will attain the Dharma jewel within, the actual protection from suffering. One will naturally, merely on seeing a Dharma text, a reverence for them will arise within oneself. So what's presented here, Lama Tsongkhapa has brought to life by giving examples of how the great Kadampa masters in the past acted. And he's brought those examples, he included those examples in his texts so that his students both at that time and in generations to come, could see what kind of example we should emulate. And by emulating them, we will be accomplishing these precepts, which means we'll be deepening our refuge. Lama Tsongkhapa wrote quite a bit on these two precepts. And for us in these modern times, it's actually very pertinent, because these days to make or to access images of Buddhas is very easy. We can print them off as many as we want from the internet, and we can print really quite fabulous and good quality images. And this costs us almost nothing. And likewise, to purchase Buddha images, again, with the internet, is so easy. And some of the greatest craftsmen can be commissioned to send something directly to us. This is so easy these days that due to the ease in our modern world, we can see something that is of great value as commonplace. And so too in relation to texts. So in the not so distant past, texts were rare, difficult to come across, and therefore easy to relate to as being precious because they were in such short supply. And if lost, difficult to replace. These days, that's not the case. On the internet, so many, certainly in the Tibetan language, texts are freely available. All the texts are freely available. And in English, you can order them one after another. Their only limitation is what you can afford. So because of this change in modern times, it's very easy to see texts like Buddha images as commonplace. And this will lead us to not valuing them in the way described here, because their great value is not dependent on how rare they are. Their great value is what they will lead to. So therefore, this needs to be understood clearly, that even if a text is given away for free and you can get many copies of it, it is still something of great value. Likewise, with a Buddha image that is printed on card, it is still of great value because of the potential it has to transform minds. So therefore, we should understand this well, because if we don't, it's very easy to accumulate non-virtue. We can print something off the internet, for whatever reason we don't need it anymore, and it goes in the bin. In this way, we create non-virtue. So it's in this way, we disregard something that we should hold in reverence. So therefore, take the meaning of what is presented here to heart, and in this way, instead of creating non-virtue, one can accumulate immense merit.
And
So I think what we've covered here this afternoon is something really of importance for all of us. And as I said, even more so in our modern age. So imagine all of you at home, you have your own shrines. So again, you will know these days it's very easy to get Buddha images as well as texts. But from what's been presented here by Lama Tsongkhapa, I hope the way you now relate to your shrines and your bookshelf, it's quite different from perhaps how you would have otherwise. So when you do need to discard of something, rather, don't treat it like just some rubbish, throwing it in the bin, because be aware that the attitude that has led to such an action is not an attitude of respect and reverence, and therefore it is likely to be an attitude that is creating some obstacles for us, creating some non-virtue. Rather, relate to the books on your bookshelf and the objects on your shrine as a sense of reverence. Keep it clean and dust it. And do so as an act of reverence, as an offering, not merely as one cleans one's house, but recognize that these parts, because of what they contain, here different minds arise. It's not merely dusting. Here I'm paying respect to the Buddha, and I'm doing so because I have a wish to be influential like he is, to have a positive impact like he does. So in this way, one keeps one's shrine clean, one makes offerings before it. Likewise, one keeps one's bookshelf clean, perhaps makes offerings before that too. And this is important because in relation to these images, one can create extensive virtue or non-virtue. It all depends on one's mental attitude. And one can go about one's day ignoring them, and this is potentially a dismissive attitude. Or one can recognize just how precious these are in terms of what they represent and the impact they've had on countless generations of practitioners, and thereby relate to them with due reverence. So there certainly are times when one needs to dispose of Buddhist texts or Buddhist writing on the texts, or perhaps Buddha images or prayer flags. And so there are times when one needs to dispose of these. So certainly these should not just be thrown out with the garbage, but rather they need to be burnt. And when they are being burnt, it's not just that this is the way that we dispose of holy images and texts, and therefore I have to, you know, part of this club, this is how I have to act. That is not the right approach. Because then, again, it's not so different from burning our rubbish. Rather, we should have the attitude that independence on this Buddha image, this prayer flag, this piece of text, I have created so much merit and I'm thankful for that. I appreciate that. But now, for whatever reason, it's time to remove it. And by this process of burning it with a respectful attitude and appreciative attitude to what this has performed for me, the merit I've accumulated independence on it, I now offer what I'm burning here, I offer it to the Buddhas. So what one is doing, one is still burning in the same process as before, but one's taking care of one's mind. The physical activity is no different. And to an outside observer, they won't observe anything different, but you're taking care of your mind. Guarding against your mind being one of disposal, of getting rid of something, but rather one is now making an offering. One is moving something from its one state to the next by offering it to the Buddhas. So one needs to do this in a way that is genuine in the sense of, or genuine towards, that one isn't disposing of something, but rather one is, whilst one is removing something that one no longer can keep, one is doing so with a positive attitude, not a dismissive attitude. So the way I suggest you burn, whether it's images, text or prayer flags, is what you imagine offering is what has been printed. So it would either be an image or words, or the images printed on the prayer flags. You imagine offering that up to the Buddhas. And you imagine you burning blank sheets of paper, or blank sheets of paper, blank prayer flags. And in this way, you are making it very clear, I'm not burning a Dharma, I'm offering the Dharma, and then I'm burning just the material substance. So in this way, one is trying to guard one's mind from an attitude of disposal, but rather having an attitude of giving. And thank you. We can conclude there for this weekend. Thank you.